plan on flying? It's time to upgrade to a real ID. Because in order to board domestic flights, your driver's license or state-issued ID must be a real ID, or you'll need another acceptable form of identification. So don't wait. Find out how to get your real ID at tsa.gov/real ID. That's tsa.gov/real ID. Or visit your local DMV. And then you'll be cleared for takeoff.
Before I get started here tonight, I want to give a shout out to JT from the Paranormal Sun podcast. He's out of New Zealand, and I was so honored JT sent me a congratulatory message on my 100th episode. I am truly honored and blessed to have a great following, great friends in the podcasting world, and JT is one of those people. JT also has over 100 episodes, actually 120-some, the last I counted. So thank you, JT. Thank you very much for your remarks. And this is what JT sent me.
Hello, it's JT, the host of The Paranormal Sun. I just wanted to drop in to congratulate Al and the Ghosts in the Valley podcast for making it to 100 episodes. That's a really amazing milestone, Al, and I look forward to sending you another congratulations when you reach 200. All the best, my friend. Take care. And keep pumping out that amazing content.
Are you looking for a new book to read? Check out my newest book, An Awakening, by Wendy M. Cope, last name spelled K-O-K. Basically, it's a story of good versus evil, and these things slowly start taking over the residents of this small northern town of Neillsville, Wisconsin, and I would love it if you would read it. My books are available on Barnes & Noble, Amazon, Book Baby Bookshop, everywhere really, and you can find me at WendyMCopeAuthor.com.
This is Amber Rose Washington, music producer and author of the best-selling book, Hiding From Myself. And you're listening to the Ghosts in the Valley podcast.
UFO September. Hello, I'm Al Cooley, host of Ghost in the Valley podcast. I'm going to be running a four-part series this month. Every Tuesday will be a different UFO incident. Starting out will be the Kecksburg, Pennsylvania UFO crash that happened in a wooded area in Kecksburg, Pennsylvania, a few miles from Pittsburgh. First of all, I want to thank Sherry Granato. She was a past guest a few months ago on my show, and she turned me on to the Kecksburg Festival that took place in July. And my wife and I traveled there. It's about 120 miles from where I live, about a two-hour ride. I met a lot of interesting people there, and I will get into that at the end of the episode. What I'm excited about today is I contacted Brian Vike. He did an interview of what is to believe the first eyewitness that appeared at the crash site on December 9th, 1965. And I will have that interview in its entirety. It's about 30 minutes long. I will take a break approximately halfway through the interview, and we will go over what was discussed. And I'm really excited about this episode because, like I said, my wife and I traveled to Kecksburg. I talked to a few people there. Again, thank you, Sherry Granato, and your husband, John. Links you have sent me, I truly do appreciate it. Thank you, Brian Vike, for talking to me and giving me permission to replay this interview. So without further ado, let's get on with the interview. This interview took place on October 22nd, 2005, some 40 years after the crash. This is believed to be the first eyewitness that stumbled upon this crash site on December 9th, 1965. It is believed to be a UFO. Here is the first part of that interview with Brian Vike.
Anyways, we're talking to a gentleman tonight who, well, he had an amazing encounter here in Kecksburg. He was a witness to this crash of the object that sat, I guess that was in a ravine there, wasn't it?
Yes, it was.
And that would have been December 9th, 1965 in Pennsylvania, Kecksburg.
Uh-huh.
Okay, sir. Could you give us pretty much, I guess, your lowdown, what sort of, you know, what kind of a day it ended up being and, you know, what led you out to the area and, basically what was going on? I know we can just sort of figure out from there and go from there.
Okay. It was a particularly warm night for December. I remember it was, by those local standards, would have been considered quite balmy.
Okay.
And we decided, my brother and a friend of his, to go coon hunting. So we got the dogs. We had three dogs. And we drove up to the site, which is now Media Road.
Okay.
Area. And beyond that, actually, we drove up to a place called Freeman Falls.
All right.
And we split up, and we decided that my brother's friend would decide to park a truck on the other side to the road to our destination, and then bring ourselves back with our dogs to the beginning point, and we would hunt towards the truck.
Okay.
The other truck. So we split up, and I would say we had about a half-mile distance between the three of us, and we were moving abreast through the woods above Media Road, mm-hmm. Above the Culp Farm. And I was lowest, I would say lowest, referring to closest to the site to where the Media Road, to where the crash site was.
Okay, gotcha, okay.
And I kind of looked back towards Kecksburg because this bright light caught my eye.
Okay.
And I thought, that must be a plane with its landing gear down. That's the landing gear light I can see. And I thought, no, that's way too light.
And about the color of that, sir?
It was orange.
Okay.
I thought, my God, that's a plane. It's on fire.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm watching it, and all of a sudden, it changed course 90 degrees. Very abruptly. And now it's headed directly towards me.
Okay.
And then it made another course change,
mm-hmm.
kind of away from me, then back towards me.
Okay.
And it seemed like it was maintaining a certain altitude, but then all of a sudden made a sharp dip down.
Okay. Was that be one after one, I'd say, one of the turns it made then?
Yeah. I'd say it had gone from, you know, it'd be hard for me to tell the elevation, from 500 to 600 feet down to probably 300 feet.
Oh goodness, that's cool. Okay.
Yeah, fast.
Yeah, that's a big drop. Yeah, you bet. Because you get anyways you usually get even if you get like people saying fireballs and stuff like this, they're gonna come down on an angle usually up pretty high, even if they're low, they're still gonna stick on a protection area there at an angle. They can come in
right.
even on an arc. But
a projected angle.
Right, and they're not gonna just do this abruptness, eh?
Yeah. And what happened was I saw it coming, and I assumed that my brother and his friend had also seen it, but they didn't.
Mm-hmm.
They were some distance above me.
Okay.
So I saw it come again, and I saw it come down.
Mm-hmm.
So I ran over to that site. I had one of the dogs with me, and ran to the site, went down into the ravine, and a small brush fire had started.
Okay.
Right when it hit the ground.
Right.
So I went down thinking maybe I could help someone.
Right.
Went down into the ravine, and I noticed this is not an airplane.
Right. Well, yeah, you're going to discover that real quick.
Yeah.
Right from the shape. And then,
right.
Okay, and just keep going on here.
I noticed that the thing had partially dug itself into the ravine.
Right.
And maybe, I would say maybe 2 to 3 feet of its length was dug in.
Okay.
The back of it was flat, probably 5 foot in diameter.
Mm-hmm.
And the sides were, I don't know what you would call it, kind of a terraced kind of, I don't know what that description is, but anyway, it was textured.
Okay, yeah, okay, I got what you mean. You're right, yep, got
you. Yeah, it was like, yeah, rippled.
Okay.
And I had a 6-volt dry cell light that we used for coon hunting, and shined it on it, and it was steaming because it's dead.
It's so hot.
It was hot,
yeah.
And plus there was smoke from the fire.
Right.
It was a big fire, but it's burning some brush. And I shined the light on it to see if there was any type of opening or anything, or any type of identifier mark, and there was a band.
Okay.
Maybe a 1 foot up from the base, there was a band, a metal band, that looked like it had some type of drawings on it or some type of lettering.
Okay.
And the band was maybe 2 inches wide.
Okay. Now, just for curiosity, just so I got clear, now, was that the end what was sticking up? Say,
yeah.
It was paid, put it out of the ground.
Uh-huh.
Okay, yeah, so that you had this band running around. And the color of this whole thing?
Well, it was kind of a bronze color.
Good, it was a bronze, okay.
Yeah.
Okay, good enough.
And I looked at some of the lettering some of the figures on this band, and it didn't make any sense. It didn't look like any language. It was a series of dots. Swirls, tight swirls, like, and kind of triangle shapes, and some were almost crosses with two lateral lines across.
Right.
And just strange markings that I had never seen or never seen in a book, anything like that.
Gotcha,
I was only 15 at the time, so I wasn't really a world traveler. But
yeah.
Nonetheless, I had never seen anything like that. So my first instinct was I was about 15 feet away from it, as close as I got.
Okay.
And
you're there by yourself, basically,
yes,
at that point, eh?
Yeah.
Okay.
And my first instinct was to go back and get my brother and to get help.
Right.
Or to make a phone call to get help.
Right, understandable.
So I came up out of the ravine. I couldn't find my dog, so finally did whistle and got the dog back and started running back up the hill yelling for my brother.
Mm-hmm.
And I met them coming towards me.
Okay.
And my brother said, "My God, what was it?" And we went back down and looked, and I showed him from the road. It was sticking into the hillside. I said, I don't know what it is. So at that time, we heard the fire engines coming from Kecksburg.
Okay.
So my brother says, "Well, I don't know there's much we can do here," but he says, "Maybe we can talk to the fire department or something like that." And we agreed that there wasn't much we could do.
Right.
So we left, and we took the dogs home. One thing I thought was strange is about we walked back down to the site with my brother. We had all three dogs with us,
mm-hmm.
and the dogs had their hackles raised on their back.
So they were upset, or
they were upset.
They, about it
they
anyway.
Were sniffing the air, and they were upset.
Right.
I don't know what.
Agitated,
it was.
Anyways, about something.
Yeah, they were very agitated.
Right.
And they were antsy. They kept wrapping their leashes behind us.
Oh goodness.
Yeah, they fell behind us, and we pull them out. They were very disturbed by whatever it was. So we left, took the dogs home, and told my parents about it. And, of course, it's got my dad's curiosity fueled. So at that time, a lot of people started driving over there to see what it was.
Well, I bet. You got the fire department. The fire department had to know, and I'm sure, a lot of people saw this thing coming across.
Yeah, the Mount Pleasant Fire Department came out, and they thought it was an airplane crash.
Right, right.
So we tried to get back up that road, and the Westmoreland County Sheriff's Department, I guess it was, had put a barrier across.
Right, okay.
So we couldn't get back up.
Okay, that was probably, now just for curiosity too, you know, you might not know, I don't know,
yeah.
But do you believe at that point they put up, say, a blockade barrier just to keep the looky-loos sort of thing out of this situation because it was an emergency, a possible plane crash?
Yeah.
So at that point, there was really nothing kind of suspicious about it.
No.
Well, it was, I guess, when you look back at it, say, what was the thing? But, I mean, for everything that was happening that time.
Yeah, they...
Right.
The fire department went in, and I guess the sheriff's department... I know there was a sheriff's department car full crossways in the road, and they were in the process of putting up barrier tapes, in fact.
Okay, gotcha.
And so we asked the sheriff's department, you know, what was it? And he says, "I don't have any information on it." He says, "The fire department is, you know, attempting to rescue or something." He didn't say rescue, but they're at the site.
Right, exactly.
They're taking care of the site.
Yep, makes sense.
So that was about the end of it for the evening, and we watched the news that night. And then I didn't hear much on the news that night about it, but the next day was a school day, so I went back to school, and the teachers in school, I was 15 years old, and the teachers were telling us, "Don't talk about it."
Okay.
They said a meteorite came down and don't say anything about it.
Huh.
And I thought, that's strange. Why wouldn't you be allowed to talk about a meteorite?
Right.
And I knew it wasn't a meteorite. And I told my friend, I said, my brother and his friend were up there, we were coon hunting, and I actually did see it. And there were a number of other kids that lived in that area that went up there, but they were late getting up. The fire department was already there, so they couldn't get to the site.
Right, okay, gotcha.
So they said, well, we know something hit the ground because all those people were there, and
right.
we could smell smoke.
Yep.
So we know something came down. So they were, of course, very curious about what I saw, and I told them what I saw. And my family, we knew most of the people in the volunteer fire department.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, my sister dated Bob Bully Bush, and I knew Bill Weaver, that family very well.
Right.
Bill Bittner, I went to school with his son, Bob. Bob Bittner. Bob and Bob Sr. Bob Sr. Bob Jr. And Bob Bittner was, at the time, he was the assistant fire chief. And Ed Myers was actually the Gettysburg fire chief.
Okay, yeah.
And what happened was, Ed Myers worked swing shift. He worked evening shift at a plant, I believe, in Greensburg, maybe 15 miles away, somewhere like that.
Right.
So he was not there.
Okay.
Bob Littner was the guy that was there. He was the fill-in fire chief at the time.
Okay.
But gotcha. He worked day shift and was off in the evenings. So he responded.
Right.
And the thing that people were very miffed about was, after this happened, Ed Myers came out and said, oh, nothing came down. There was nothing ever hit the ground. The people in Kecksburg are just country bumpkins looking to get notoriety. And it really made people upset.
Well, the thing was seen all the way from Canada right down to your area, yeah, before it hit the ground.
That's right.
I mean, goodness sakes.
Right. Yeah, that's right. So it gets better.
I bet.
It really drew a line between people in Kecksburg.
Yes.
And that's basically why I'm telling the story, is to try to mend things and
okay.
to let people know that there absolutely was something hit the ground. It absolutely was not a meteorite.
Right.
I'm not saying it was a UFO with little
yes,
man.
That's fair enough. That really is fair enough. That's fair enough, Dave.
My assumption was that it was a Russian space capsule.
Right.
Because to me, that I've seen the shape of American space capsules, and it was kind of shaped like that.
Yeah, so in other words, you almost had, I think I've seen or heard descriptions from this Acorn, or Acorn, rather.
Yeah, Acorn.
Acorn,
yeah,
I don't know what I was talking about. I'm probably thinking of some of the point on its head.
Yeah.
But anyways, you know, this Acorn to something more cylindrical, too,
yeah,
you know, so.
Right.
But you're talking that this more looked like something similar, let's say, similar or, you know, close to, say, one of our capsules, or the more American
capsule. One of our capsules, but the outside was kind of rippled.
Gotcha.
Yeah, it was kind of rippled effect. In fact, the reproduction that they put on top of the Kecksburg Fire Department is very similar to what it was.
Okay,
gotcha. And the guys that saw it, Bill Weaver and all of them, they made that.
Well,
be. And they put it up there. So that's what it looked like.
Holy smokes, eh?
But I think it was a little taller than that, but I wouldn't swear to it. It
right.
Might be the exact scale.
Holy smokes, eh?
So what happened after that, it kind of all blew over.
Wow, that was really fascinating. That's just the first half of the interview. The other half's going to come up right after a short break, but I want to recap on the first part so far. You know, seeing the area, I was there last month in Kecksburg, Pennsylvania, and talking to a few people, and doing some research on this crash in 1965. Almost everybody had the same story. And it kind of jives with what this young man's saying. He was 15 years old at the time that he stumbled upon this crash in Kecksburg. And he's reliving his story and trying to debunk a lot of the false statements that were made after the fact. I find it fascinating that from Canada to Kecksburg, the object was tracked. There's no way in hell that the military could get there so quickly and be in so many different people's homes asking questions. What did you see? Using their telephone, and their telephone records didn't have any record of them calling out on their phone. So a lot of this was very, very well covered up. First, it was a meteor, a Russian satellite. It was a Russian spaceship. It was nothing. And then it was a UFO again. And then it was taken to Wright-Patterson Air Force Base. And then NASA lost the all the evidence that was taken from the site. They lost it from the Freedom of Information Act that was to look at some of these documents and the material that was at the site, be it a UFO, be it a Russian space capsule, be it a meteor. It's gone. And according to a lot of the witnesses I talked to and a lot of the people I talked to at the Keksberg site last month, they all had the same belief that there was something there. Something was taken out. One like was in a coffin-like box, and another one was the capsule was on the back of a flatbed truck. We're going to get to the rest of this interview right after these brief messages.
Not feeling the popular music on mainstream radio today? Do you find yourself longing for the glory days of rock and roll? Well, we've got something for you. CLE Rocks is a podcast focused on rock and roll, the artists who defined it, the moments that shaped it, and the stories behind it all. And we're giving it to you from the city where rock and roll was born.
Hello, Cleveland!
CLE Rocks features interviews with music legends past and present. We explore the untold stories behind some of music's most memorable events, and we engage in lively debates that go far beyond the Beatles versus the Stones. If you want to know what it's like to be a former member of KISS,
karma's a
need the lowdown on Bruce Springsteen's new album from a member of the E Street Band?
Bruce doesn't make bad records, but this is a very unusual, powerful record.
Or wonder what it was like to witness Nine Inch Nails' iconic Woodstock 94 performance?
There were 350,000 people there, and you couldn't move one inch to the left or the right or back. You just had to go with the crowd.
Check out CLE Rocks with me, your host and music journalist Troy Smith, straight from the birthplace of rock and roll.
This is Beth Darlington, paranormal investigator and owner of Access Paranormal, and you're listening to the Ghost in the Valley podcast.
And now for the second part of Brian Fike's interview with the first person that was at the crash site of the 1965 Keksberg UFO incident in Pennsylvania.
In 1968, I enlisted in the Air Force.
Okay.
And I got stationed here in the Bay Area at Hamilton Air Force Base in Marin County.
Mm-hmm.
I was an aircraft fighter mechanic,
mm-hmm.
and I was in a fighter interceptor squadron. So I was in the barracks one night,
mm-hmm.
and the alert siren went off, and our F-106's interceptors went out and intercepted something out over the Pacific.
Right, okay.
And that was very common. The Russian bear bombers would play cat and mouse. They would come in and...
Right.
And our interceptors would go out and turn them back.
That's right, gotcha.
So the mechanics, myself, and the pilots were very close. We had very close camaraderie.
Right.
And one of our pilots at the time was a very seasoned pilot. He was did two tours in Vietnam. His name was Tex.
Mm-hmm.
And we were all on pretty much first name basis. And
okay.
So the next day I saw him, I knew that he was on alert duty that night, and I said, "You guys had a scramble last night, huh?" And he goes, "Yeah." And I said, "Was Russians playing games again?" And he goes, "His exact words were, I don't know what the hell it was."
Alrighty.
Yeah. So got to talking to him, and I related this story to, I said, when I was a boy in Pennsylvania,
right,
about, you know, this, people think it was a UFO, or, and his jaw dropped about 10 feet.
Really?
He looked at me, and he said, "You actually saw it." And I said, "Yeah." I assume I was the first one there.
Really? Well, by the sounds of it, I mean, gosh, I guess anybody who showed up, anybody that, say, the actual eyewitnesses, there was a few of them,
yeah,
were supposedly shooed out by whoever, some kind of authority figure anyway.
They were, yeah.
Pardon me. And then, and of course, well, the fire department there, everybody else was there. So, I mean, you probably, by the sounds of it, were the very first ones to see
it. I believe I was, because I
it makes
Yes.
I felt the impact, and I actually did see it come down in that ravine.
Yeah, just for curiosity, too, if you don't mind me asking here, when this, as this thing, as you watch it sort of come across, you know, as it just burned and whatnot, did it have a big sort of a contrail behind it, or any sort like
it
that?
It was sparking.
It was, eh?
Yeah, it was sparking. It looks like things were, like, it was strange, like, it was almost like it was molten metal was flying off of it.
Right, gotcha. So it really heated up, eh?
Yes, yeah, sometimes the heat shield was burning off.
Yes, gotcha.
I don't know. It was It was weird. And, yeah, there was kind of a contrail behind it.
Okay. So I just wanted to know, because I know I did remember seeing or reading about that, eh?
Yeah.
That some people have it. I mean, you know, you get variations, eh, from different people, because people, it's not they all seen the same things, but sometimes, you know, they'll say, well, jeepers, it wasn't that big. And, you know, it was really huge. You know, I mean, it's just variations. Because that person, let's put it this way, people get excited when they see things.
Oh, yeah.
I know I do, you know. And then sometimes they, you know, maybe the story will get embellished a bit. Sometimes it isn't. It's very accurate, you know.
Yeah.
So that's why I'm trying to just try to, you know, see what your thoughts on it, you know.
Uh-huh. And, it was spark.
Great.
It was like something coming off. And as it was coming down, it was making a loud whooshing sound.
And it was, okay. Yeah. I'm going to ask. Okay.
But getting back to this major.
Yes.
He related the story to me that he had a friend that he served with was in the Air National Guard in Michigan.
Mm-hmm.
In 1965 that actually intercepted this thing.
Okay.
On that night.
Now, this is interesting, too.
Yeah.
Oh, my goodness. Okay.
And he intercepted it. With I don't know how many other interceptors, and
so in other words, they were tracking this thing as it was coming in, and then scrambled aircraft
who
pretty small greeted, you might say. Yeah.
And I assumed that there were interceptors following it all the way in, although I didn't hear any jets or anything.
Right.
And he was told, this friend of his, the pilot, was told afterwards that they identified the object and landed in western Pennsylvania, and it was a meteorite. End of story.
This is end of story.
Yeah.
No, that's what he was told.
That's what he was told.
Right. Well, when did it, well, just for, because, okay, at least from what you heard, you know, around the town, and so far from friends and neighbors and gossip, I guess, too, when did the military show up, say, after the, say, the fire department, sheriff blocked the highway off, the fire department was there, so forth?
Yeah. I would say after the crash, I would say within an hour, the military was there.
Okay, how far is the military, a base away from?
Pittsburgh Air National Guard. But I believe some of the Mount Pleasant, which is about 5 miles away, I believe the Mount Pleasant National Guard was there.
So they were pretty close then.
They were close.
That's what I was getting at. You know, what I was seeing is because the thing was, if they had these jets that, say, scrambled, followed this thing or whatever, intercepted it of some sort to make some kind of determination of what it was, and, you know, were relaying the information back, I was wondering how far the actual bases were away, because if they're aware of it, then they were already on their way,
they
possibly.
They were on their way. I'm sure they were on their way.
Yeah, okay.
I'm sure they were tracking it. Another thing that I should tell you is that that night when we went home, took the dogs back, and came up with my dad, at that point the fire department and the sheriff's department were there, and then the next day we went back to the site, and the military was everywhere. They were everywhere. They were through Kecksburg. They were walking around another little hamlet called Mammoth, and there was a barrier set up. And there were signs on the barrier that said, deadly force authorized beyond this point, no admittance, and they had M14s,
right? Okay.
And they were pointing them at people.
Jeez,
they were literally pointing them at people.
Well, incredible, incredible.
Yeah.
That really is incredible. Hey, this is your home land here, eh?
Oh, yeah.
Not like you're going to war against each other right now.
And they told everyone in the community that it was a meteorite. So why would you be pointing loaded weapons at people if it was a meteorite?
You wouldn't.
Yeah, why would
you? You wouldn't. Unless it was something that's
far out there, and we can stretch our imagination as much as we want.
Yeah.
It was something that, they had came back, Russians had came back. Mm-hmm. I mean, I guess it's a lot of questions, but we're not get the answers. But that's pretty bizarre to have, you know, armed. I mean, not that they're not armed, but to sit there and put up blockades, tell about a meteor sighting and a meteor hitting the ground and having people pointing guns at somebody else. Incredible.
And then when the military really lost credibility was when they said nothing landed. You know, they came back, and Ed Myers also said nothing ever landed.
Yeah, they got to get their story, their act together here.
they really lost credibility. Here.
Well, I think, you know what, I think they get to this point where they have something, and of course, you know, I can only guess of what it was, and you know, you don't want to get too wild, or at least I don't for sure, but but the thing is, you know, I wonder if they have, when they do have something like this, they have absolutely no idea what to do with it, and then they start putting out things, and they say, well, people are not going to buy this, we'll put out something else.
That's right. It just doesn't make any sense. That's right, and before long, it just becomes a joke. It's like, you know,
well, yeah,
it's so ridiculous that, you know, anybody can tell that, you know, that couldn't be, or, you know, they're making lies to cover lies.
Well, and that's probably, maybe that's a good example of what they were doing. I mean, you said, like, sort of to heal the community, because you do have a split in the community.
Yes,
you
and
know?
There is to this day.
There is, yes, I know.
And, well, what happened was this on the second day, I believe it was the night of the second day, the day after, they took it out.
Okay.
It came out through Kempsburg. From what I heard, they said like 2 a.m.
Mm-hmm.
on a flatbed truck.
Oh, Saturday morning, eh?
Yeah. They took it out on a flatbed truck. It was covered with a tarp.
Yeah.
And rumors said that it went to Wright-Patterson Air Force Base.
Mm-hmm.
That's where they took it to.
Right. That's right.
And people that live right there at that junction of Media Road saw the military coming in with this truck, and they saw a number of trucks coming in, and one of the trucks was kind of a mobile command post, I guess, that was pulling a trailer.
Okay. Yeah.
And so there was a perimeter set up around this crash site.
Mm-hmm.
People thought that it was just the road had been blocked, but this is very interesting too. About a year or two after the crash, we still hunted in that area,
mm-hmm.
and my brother was coming across the top of the hill on with Culp's farm,
mm-hmm.
and walking through a hayfield and hit a K-ration can.
Oh, okay.
Military K-ration can.
Yep.
And kicked around his feet, and there were a couple more buried, maybe 6 to 8 inches under the ground, and looked around and kind of made like a circle, and we walked around and didn't find any more, but we thought, you know, it'd be interesting if somebody came up here with a metal detector to see if you could find more of these, but we never did. But I believe there were soldiers positioned in a circle or some type of configuration around the crash, out from the crash site.
Yeah, so no one to keep everybody out,
mm-hmm.
which would make sense.
Right.
Yeah, but why would they do that if it was only a meteor?
That's right.
I'm making a joke here. Totally ridiculous, isn't it?
That's what drives everybody crazy.
Exactly. Exactly.
You know, if it's a meteorite.
Well, I don't know of any. I honestly don't know of any branch of the military in this country that has ever run out, or probably in your country, you might even know, run out over a meteor.
No, they don't.
They usually are scientists from one of the universities some branch of someplace. They'll just run out and see if they can scout around and hunt it up and look for some fragments.
Absolutely.
That's it. As far as I know.
Absolutely. And as I said, the military, I know for a fact, from what this major told me, they were tracking it all the way down over Canada.
See, that's really interesting, isn't it?
Yeah.
That's a really good piece of this puzzle.
Yeah.
You know, that's interesting.
And it changed courses a number of times.
Mm-hmm.
And but I said from what I heard of this pilot's friend, that it was changing course when they intercepted it. It was making a long sweeping course change.
Okay.
Wide sweeping course change.
I got you. Okay.
And when I saw it, I had never seen anything move like that in my life. It was flying. It was making 90-degree turns. Zigzags.
Right. And the thing, it was moving pretty quick?
Quick. Very quick.
Okay.
Just, it was here, then there.
Okay. Now, here's something I'm interested in. Now, okay, due to the speed, which is quick, you know, we can't put an estimation on how fast it's traveled, but it was quick.
Yeah.
Now, when you saw it in the in this ravine, now, did it have a long, where it sort of dug itself in, you know, or was it just sort of just punched, like somebody dropped in a big stone and left it there? Was there any kind of a impact area, slide area behind it?
It came in at a fairly sharp angle. I would say a 60-degree angle.
Okay. So what I was, Steve, see, what I was wondering is, just from, I mean, we don't know, because this is going to be a guess, but you might, you know, might be able to sort of have a feel for it. Do you feel this thing may have slowed down, or would it impact it as hard as it is and knocked in that much ground?
You know, I had a really spooky feeling after this thing came down, because, you know, these 6-volt dry cell battery lights,
yes,
pretty bright.
Right. Yeah.
And for, you know, being a kid and not thinking, I was shining it like out towards this thing.
Mm-hmm.
And I almost wondered if, did it pick up on this light?
Oh.
Well, I can't swear to that.
Right. I got
but it made this sharp dip down over Kecksburg and came in, you know, like I said, right towards me. So I don't know. Did it see this light?
It's a possibility. I mean, you know.
Yeah.
It really is a possibility.
Yeah, and, you know, I wasn't waving it around. I was just like
right.
Holding it on it.
That's right. Exactly.
I was on a hill holding it on it, and it came in right towards me.
Well, I'll be, eh? Holy smokes. This is really an incredible story.
Yeah, I didn't even think about that until the next day when my brother and I were talking, and he said, well, where were you and all this? And I said,
right.
Well, I said, I was just like, I said, I had the light, and I was like shining it out there. And he said, well, why were you shining a light towards it? I said, I don't know, like when you see something, you just want to, you know, put a light on it.
That's right. Hey, kids are kids.
Yeah.
I still do it anyway. You see something, put a light on it.
Yeah,
you know, it doesn't matter. We're human beings. We're curious.
Some type of automatic response.
Yeah, exactly.
So, yeah, it had dipped down, and then as it came in towards me, it made a real abrupt landing. It came down like 60 degrees. Pow.
Okay.
Yeah, it wasn't like, it didn't come in like a sled. It didn't slide in.
Gotcha. Okay.
And then about a 60-degree dip, pow. Right into the ravine.
Jeez. Now into this ravine, because this thing is still traveling pretty quick. I don't know if you could see much of the underside of it, because maybe it was pushed in, you know, into the ground at all, so it sort of dug itself in, so it may not have. But I'm just wondering, was there any kind of debris off the object itself, scattered around, or anything?
I didn't see
smashed or anything on the object?
Uh-uh. There was
nothing. See, that's interesting as hell, because you've got something coming in at a darn good speed, eh?
Oh, yeah.
That's pretty amazing.
And I thought, well, yeah, all this debris was flying off of it.
Right.
Off of it, and why wouldn't there be some of that debris on the ground?
Right, exactly.
but there was nothing there.
And did you happen to hear if there was any stories like circling around the towns or whatnot about as this the path this object traveled? Like if people would have said, "Wow, here it goes over top of us, or just off of this side, or right side, west, or east, or whatever." And did anybody ever hear if the military happened to go out and was scouring the woods or the area for anything that might have dropped off?
Yes, they did.
They did.
They did.
Okay.
There's a number of little hamlets in that area, and one area in particular that they were looking at was behind the, there's a soft drink factory plant in Kecksburg.
Right.
And there's a wooded area behind the soft drink factory. And the next day, the military was all over that area.
Well, I'll be, to me, it doesn't even make sense for anybody to say a meteor, not with that kind of presence
and
been put into it.
There were people, the military was everywhere.
Yeah, it sure sounds like it. My goodness, that's incredible. And there was, did you ever, of course, you never came forward, did you, too much?
I didn't.
Like maybe it was a good thing.
Everybody, my dad told me, my mother said, you know, right now, I told kids in school, and my dad said, don't tell anybody else.
Right.
Because, you know, the military is trying to keep this thing quiet.
Oh, they are, but they sure do.
Yeah, and
well, look what happened to the other people, too.
That's right.
You know,
we saw this almost physical altercation.
Right. I've heard the stories. I definitely have. Where they've actually been visiting some of the farms out there. And went,
oh, yeah.
Yeah, and told them to keep quiet.
So I never said much about it. I had people years after me, after talked to me about it, people from the volunteer fire department, and they wanted to know what I had seen and all this, and I told them, and my story pretty much matched their description of the object.
Right, gotcha.
When they got to the scene, so.
Yeah, and everybody, I guess, pretty much now, well, I mean, you know, it's great you came forward with the story, because, I mean, it just verifies that there was something else took place, whatever it may have been, and it wasn't definitely a meter, and I can understand you, you know, coming out with this, because it would be nice if the community did heal, because there still is that rift in there.
Oh,
it's a real big rift.
Well, what really prompted me to tell the story was a few weeks ago, it was aired on TV again.
Okay.
And Ed Myers was talking about, you know, that nothing ever happened, nothing ever came down, and it just really, really got to me.
Okay.
Somebody needs to come forward, tell the story as it was, and I can tell you 100% truth. I would tell people on my deathbed the same story. What I'm telling you is absolutely true.
Okay. Okay. So is there anything else you want to add?
No, I guess that's about it.
Go.
I can't think of anything.
Okay.
Else.
Just hold on for me, but thank you very much. But just hold on for a second.
That was fantastic. Thank you, Brian Vike, for letting me replay your interview with the first person, supposedly, that stumbled upon this crash in 1965 in Kecksburg. So my question is, what do you think? Do you think it was a Russian cosmonauts in that Russian capsule? Or was it a meteorite? Or was it something from out and beyond? There was a story that a truck driver had a load of bricks that he delivered to Wright-Patterson Air Force Base. And he went in and he did see the Kecksburg Acorn craft at Wright-Patterson. And also that looked like a deformed body on a slab. Now, was that body an alien or was that body a Russian cosmonaut? I don't think we'll ever know. What do you think? I'd like to hear your thoughts. And you can email me at cooley54@gmail.com. And the links will be at the bottom of this episode. I did meet a few interesting people at the Kecksburg Festival. They have it every year. And people come from all around the nation, dressed up as aliens, spacesuits, and it's a really a fun festival. My wife and I went. I met Stan Gordon there. That was very interesting. He had a documentary out, which was called Kecksburg, The Untold Story. I bought the DVD off of him. He autographed it for me. I met two other podcasters there, one from Buffalo. I met people that knew people of that era in 1965 that are no longer with us, but their stories live on, and their stories actually jive with this witness that I just played the interview. The only difference is they don't think it was a Russian capsule. But the question is always, and it always will be, why the cover-ups? Why Wright-Patterson Air Force Base would keep falling objects from the sky as top secret? What did you do with this object, or the human remains, or alien remains, whatever they're gathering and storing there? But it's always either a weather balloon or a meteor. I find that very fascinating. You know, and when it's tracked from Canada down to Kecksburg, it evidently was out of control and zigzagging and sparks coming off of it. And according to this witness, it was losing parts before it crashed. So evidently they have all the parts. They have everything. They know what it is. And then they lose it. What are your thoughts? I'm really curious. Thank you, Brian Vike, for sending me the link on this very, very fascinating interview. Thank you, Sherry Granato, for also sending me the same link to Brian. That led me to contact Brian to ask him to be on the show, but unfortunately his wife is not doing well, and so he chose to send me the link for this interview, which I'm very, very thankful, and I hope your wife gets better and she's okay. Thank you to everybody in Kecksburg that were very gracious to me and my wife. Join me next week when I do a look back on the Berkshire's UFO, and Tom Warner will be my guest. He was on a couple years ago. See you next week with another great episode on Ghosts in the Valley podcast.